Hello and welcome to episode 90 of the Tech Reformation, where the world of technology meets the worldview of Christianity. I'm Ben.
I'm Derek.
And this is Tank.
This week, we're talking about communities on mission. Should tech companies be banning sites they interpret as hateful? And seven ways the iPhone has made life worse. Without further ado, let's get started. Tank, what do you have for us this week?
So this week, I'm going to talk about No Man's Sky. It's a video game. Do either of you all know it?
Yes, I've heard of it.
Cool. I had just barely heard of it. I don't know too much about it, but I read this article on Kotaku that crossed my news feed, and it was talking about a community developed there. So No Man's Sky is from Wikipedia. It says that players are free to perform within the entirety of a procedurally generated deterministic open universe. I don't know what any of that means either. But anyway, the important part is...
It basically means it's really huge and really complex, and the computer generates it all. Like, it's not hands-on designed, necessarily, is.
Which includes over 18 quintillion planets, many with their own sets of flora and fauna. So, the universe is big, and the video game universe is also very big, with 18 quintillion planets that the players are free to explore. And so... The idea is that the players can go through this universe and collect information on a planet and share it with other players, and they just kind of explore this world together, is my understanding of it, having not played it and not researched too much of it. So anyway, within this game, this article is about a group of people who came together, about 5,000 people, and they created a community called The Hub. And so the game doesn't ask you to do this. It doesn't start you off with this being in existence. But these players came together and said, you know, like if we created a community, then we could help new players into the game. We could work together. And so the community rose in about 5,000 players, and they ended up building like they have their base planet and they have farms and they have all this information. If you can go here to get this, you can go here to do this. And they just have this universe mapped out. Obviously not the 18 quintillion planets, but like they're slowly building, mapping out and slowly expanding as they explore. And as they go, they're preparing all the different worlds for all the different needs of the game to be able to get rich, to be able to get your items, to be able to fight the monsters, to have friends to team up with. And so they just built this community in a world that, you know, it doesn't necessarily require community. Nothing really says this is your home planet. Yeah, people may start hours away from the base planet whenever they begin a new game, and they have to travel all the way to this planet if they want to join the community. And so the article, it says that with a new update, it basically destroyed their whole community. And so they had to start all over just because it like changed all the planets, changed all the items. And so their planet that turned into like a planet of Antarctica. So it didn't work out for them anymore. But it was interesting from there. It says, so after the update, the article says, in response to those changes, one of the players formed a Galactic Council. So they, in some sense, form like a government, or there's like 19 people on this council, and they are now planning for the community's future and what new planet they're going to settle, and they're making big decisions and basically recreating this community on a new planet. And it says, like, if you're away for an hour, it takes about 5 minutes to catch up with what's going on. So that multiplies. If you're gone for work, you have to catch up for 40 minutes. And the guy says, between the council and his full-time job, he wasn't sleeping much. So anyway, that's all the big story about this community, you know, and it has this mission within the game that they've come together and they've essentially, in my mind, it's like, you know, like explorers, and they're developing a new town and they're gathering together to to provide the needs for the people, you know. I think it's kind of a cool picture. I was wondering, have any of you all been a part of a community like this? Not necessarily a video game, but just a community that you felt like was really, you know, everybody has their job, everybody's working together for the good of the community.
Well, it sounds a lot like my local church, or at least what a local church is intended to be like.
I wasn't necessarily leading there on purpose.
Oh, okay.
Like, you could have said a video game or...
No, not at all. I was just thinking of, like, 1 Corinthians 12, one body with many members, just each person being a different member in the body, and, you know, the eye having a different function than the hand. I'm paraphrasing here. I don't know exactly which body parts are mentioned in the text, so you'll have to forgive me for that. But the idea being that the eye does a different thing than the hand, and they need each other. And the eye can't say to the hand, I have no need of you. But every part has to be fulfilling its designed function, or its gifted function, as the analogy goes, for the whole thing to work well together. Isn't that the idea?
Hmm.
Yeah.
That certainly works out better in some local bodies than others, because we all have sinful, selfish tendencies, but that certainly is, I think, God's intended design for the local body.
What is the mission?
Well, I think the mission is to broadly glorify God, specifically edify the saints and evangelize the lost.
Yeah. I'd say for myself, mine was, yes, the church, for sure. I think the place I've experienced it the most, like really a strong community that's working together for a common goal, was on a mission trip, which makes sense with the word mission there. But the company that I was with, you know, you'd have a team of like 20 people, and we would be doing, we would do street evangelism. But yeah, it was like every day we would all do the same number of dramas. You know, we'd all be working together to do those dramas. We'd all have our part in the drama, and we'd all have our roles outside of the drama, whether it was carrying waters or carrying equipment. Yeah, and then after that, we'd always be doing the same thing. And that for me, like, as we worked together, as we prayed together, as we ate together every day, like, I made... what seemed like they, like, I made great friends just during that time. And we bonded together in 1 month closer than I was with people I'd grown up my whole life with. And people there knew things about me, like, we got deep with each other as we spent that time. And so those are always really fond memories that I look back to, just because of the community that was built as we shared the mission of, you know, being in this strange land and working together to share the gospel.
I think I've been on a very, very similar trip, and I agree.
Yeah, one last thought I had on all of this is, you know, there's a power working towards a common mission that really brings the community together. And of course, within the church and within small groups within the church, the gospel is what brings us together. But I also think the mission of the gospel should unite us to, as Ben was saying. And I think, at least in my experience, a lot of small groups and a lot of communities within the church, you know, that we forget the mission behind the small group. It almost becomes internal and just a growing together, which is good. But we forget that external and the power of uniting together to bring the gospel out into our community or into somewhere. And so, yeah, one thing my boss is doing is what's called missional communities. And essentially it's when you, in their small groups, their small group has this concept of a mission that together we're reaching our community or we're reaching our friends or we're reaching some high school. They just together create some sort of mission in their mind that together as a group, they're going to work to impact these people or feed the homeless or give clothes to the needy. Anyway, this community that has this mission of surviving and creating a thriving community on No Man's Sky reminded me of what the power behind small groups, that when they're banding together for a mission, they can accomplish awesome things. And especially if they're doing it in the power of the Spirit and for the glory of God. What do you got, Derek?
All right. So my topic comes from a few different sources. David Latchett mentioned in the Slack, shouldn't we be worried about the power big tech companies have to deplatform hateful voices? This is, of course, after the Charlottesville event and the reaction that Google, GoDaddy, and Cloudflare all had toward deplatforming the Daily Stormer website, which is a white nationalist website, very bad stuff, etc. And Harrison Farr on Twitter actually tweeted us before that comment too, about he was curious about whether we thought this was censorship, or whether the internet equals a utility, equals a public forum, equals like a First Amendment application or not. And so I just want to put the question out there. Should we be okay with tech companies having this kind of power and tendency? Now, it's not a tendency yet because it was kind of a one-time thing so far, but should tech companies be able to ban sites that they deem hateful?
So two things by way of caveat up front. One, from my end, this is something I find myself thinking about a lot more lately and trying to figure out how should I think about this, but feeling like I haven't researched it enough or thought about it enough to really land hard. And so while I may express very strong opinions, they also could change in a very short period of time once more information comes to me. So just a caveat up front. Also, I just want to read the First Amendment, since that was specifically appealed to in the tweet from Harrison. And this is from Google, so, you know, who knows? It's coming through Google. It could be totally altered for all I know, right? Just kidding. But it's short. It says this: Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof or abridging the freedom of speech or of the press or the right of the people peaceably to assemble or to petition the government for a redress of grievances. So the reason I'm reading it there is in talking about this, specifically First Amendment as it applies to James DeMora, which we've talked about a bunch lately, Congress shall make no law abridging the freedom of speech. Right. So it doesn't say Google shall make no law. You know, and I don't know. I can see both sides of this one. Like, I know what some people are probably thinking hearing that. But for one reason, this is why we want free and open internet, right? Because other companies theoretically, who have search engines could still index these sites. Now, one could argue, well, Google has a monopoly on the internet because people don't go to Bing to search for things. And I grant that is true. People go to Google. And so then I would wonder, are you wanting the government to impose upon Google that they must conduct their business in such a certain way so as to not restrict this website? And then I just wonder if that's consistent with your desire for net neutrality. You know, like, and that's why I started off with the caveat of, man, I haven't thought about this enough or read enough. Mm-hmm. I don't have all the answers on this one. And it's something I'm definitely trying to learn more about. So I'd love, on this one in particular, feedback in the Slack in episode discussion, just as people who have thought more about it or have questions about it, just honestly to engage in this dialogue with me that I might learn with you all. I'm open to what you guys just initially think as well. Like,
so my thoughts are these: the First Amendment does not apply in this scenario because because of what you said, it applies to the government, not to private companies. This was private companies acting on their upon their discretion.
Right.
So,
I don't think that's debatable.
Yeah, that's, well, that should
maybe
be,
it is.
It
somebody
should
let
be
me know if that one's debatable.
If you're talking about the principle of the thing, that's something different. But if you're talking about the actual First Amendment, what the First Amendment says, this is not applicable to the First Amendment. So that out of the way, this is still concerning because if you have large tech companies who are motivated by money and their own well-being, starting to be able to know that they can ban sites that they deem hateful, that's a dangerous power to hold. And even the Cloudflare CEO, after making this decision, was like, you know, this is a dangerous decision, and we're doing this once and then like revisiting this. We want to create a policy for this so that this, so that we don't, so that we have something in place so we're not making a decision willy-nilly. And the Electronic Frontier Foundation agreed. They were like, you know, this is, you know, everyone agrees that this kind of hate speech against black people with white nationalism is a bad thing. But they also say that, you know, free speech is important, even on the internet, even if it's not mandated. Once we start banning things that we deem hateful, well, that gives license to other people to ban things that they deem hateful. And we don't all consider the same things hateful. And for especially Christians, as Christians, we need to be aware of this because many of the things that we think can be interpreted as hateful, even if we don't message it that way. So with that said, I think there should be, I've been playing with this idea in my mind and I have no idea if it would work, but I wonder if there's a time now to get together like an internet council, like a government galactic for the council. Internet. Yeah, a galactic council for the internet.
Your suggestion is to grab another body of regulators to resolve this for us.
Something like that. Look,
I don't know. I don't know if I can go there.
I'm not talking about like a dictatorship. I'm talking like people coming together and allying and figuring out, you know, with calm heads, you know, what is the best way of going about.
Oh, so it's like a coalition.
Yeah, a coalition of sorts, which...
Yeah, but yeah. Since this issue is really governed by worldview, it's all going to depend on who's on the council, right? Or the coalition.
Well, yeah, that's... It mattered. That also mattered when the United States was formed, and it turned out okay. I mean, obviously, we don't have a huge amount of control
over this. Yeah, but
Derek,
back then, things were different. Things are much, much, much worse now. Don't you know how much closer to the second coming we are now?
Oh, yes, of course. How could I be so silly?
At least 250 years.
That was a joke.
at least 250 years.
I guess, I feel like maybe some people might hear this conversation and think, oh, well, the free market should take care of it. Like, it should be deemed a bad thing for Cloudflare or Google to be ideological echo chambers and silence people who disagree with them. And then everyone in the society should just sort of agree that that's a bad thing and stop using those companies. And then companies would fail and wouldn't be able to do those kinds of terrible things. And maybe that would work if it weren't sort of the popular movement of the culture to do exactly what Cloudflare and Google are doing.
Uh-huh.
Right. So that sort of doesn't really work very well.
Well, and then we get into politics discussions, like how far, you know, because if that were the case, could we survive governmentless? Like, could we survive as a country without any regulatory body over us? And then we get into varying stages of, you know, because anarchy doesn't work very well, as far as I know. Libertarianism is a mild amount of government, and then we started getting into like more regulatory. So that this is, it gets into a whole politics discussion too, which makes it even more complicated. So really, I don't have a great answer, but I wonder if some sort of regulatory body for the internet would be a good idea.
Does that not contradict your strongly held convictions on net neutrality, at least a little?
I don't think so. I would have.
How does it not?
So, and that we're running out of time, but so net neutrality applies to the.
I guess it's just the ISPs.
Yeah, just the ISPs limiting the internet. So that would be a private company limiting how you interact with the internet, right?
Sure. Yeah, I guess that's fair. It has less to do with content and more about the pipe the content flows through.
So I don't think it contradicts me. You all are free to discuss this with me in the Slack.
Yeah, let's discuss this one in the Slack this week.
Yeah. Anyway, so that's my topic for this week. Our sponsor this week is Missionalware, your Reformed theology gift shop. Missionalware sells all kinds of handy and useful things to broadcast your faith with beautiful designs of creeds, quotes, and faces of various reformers. And this stuff is available for printing across all kinds of items, mugs, journals, posters, cutting boards even. They have cutting boards people. And of course, your normal things like t-shirts, hoodies, that sort of stuff too. Mission Aware has been doing their thing for over 6 years, and they've grown an impressive library of designs and items that will appeal to any theologian, whether you've just now started discovering our history or whether you've been a theology nerd for years. Check them out at missionaware.com to get your lifestyle on mission to the glory of God, and thanks to them for sponsoring this week of Tech Reformation. Ben, what have you brought to the table for us?
All right. Recently, CNN published somebody on CNN published an opinion piece titled Seven Ways the iPhone Has Made Life Worse, because this year was the 10th anniversary of the announcement of the iPhone.
Mm-hmm.
And so there is this list of seven things that have made life worse that the iPhone has done. So I just want to play a game out of this, if that's okay.
Mm-hmm. All right.
We've talked about phones on this show. A good bit. Phones are a big part of our lives now. And so, do you guys remember all the way back in episode 3, A Quality Stick Is Hard to Find, when we talked about nomophobia and took that test?
Yeah, I know, man.
I do.
It was a long time ago.
Coincidentally, we had a ton of Tech You Should Know that week.
Yeah.
Remember when we used to get totally out of hand with all the Tech You Should Know?
Oh, I know. We had like 20 pieces of Tech You Should Know every week.
20 pieces.
Dang it.
Man, that was intense. And then we made a rule about 7, and then we made a rule about 3, and then we broke all of our rules, and now we just don't have any more Tech You Should Know.
Whee!
The evolution of Tech Reformation. Well, anyway, back to this article, 7 Ways the iPhone Has Made Life Worse. And what I want to do here is just, I'm going to give you a small pitch of the idea, and I just want you guys to agree or disagree with each point. Are you ready?
Okay.
We'll just take a vote.
Just a yes and a no. We can't clarify.
Just a yes and a no.
Oh, man.
If it really needs clarification, maybe, and I see you squirming a little bit, and I might allow for open discussion, but
okay.
We'll see. Are you ready?
Yes.
Ready.
Okay, here we go. 7 ways the iPhone has made life worse. Number 1, they're bad for our brains. Focusing on many things on our phones at once actually diminishes our cognitive abilities. Do you agree or disagree, Derek? No, Derek. I'm going to hold you to an answer on this one.
I'm going to say no, they are not bad for our brains.
Tank.
Disagree.
Okay. Number 2, 7 ways the iPhone has made life worse. Number 2, while we're busy on our phones, we're ignoring the world around us. Because we're so conditioned to check our phones all the time, many people can no longer appreciate a lake, beach, or hike. Do you agree or disagree, Tank?
Disagree.
Derek?
I will go a soft agree on this one.
Derek's going to squirm on all of them.
Soft agree.
Okay, number 3. We're also ignoring one another. I don't feel like this one needs explanation. People are on their phones instead of like talking to each other. Derek, do you agree or disagree?
Sure. Okay, the problem, the reason I'm squirming on all of these is because there's also a but behind each one of them. Like, it has this effect, but it also has this other effect of opening up something else. Like, it's not just, but anyway, I'll just go with a, yes.
Tank.
Agree.
For what it's worth, at the end of the article, this kind lady says, we all always appreciate what's great about the iPhone. It's probably good for us to see what's not so great about it sometimes, too.
Oh, yeah. Okay,
so
okay, fine.
Your point is valid.
All right, okay.
Number 4, they're ruining our relationships. And she says that we are now prone to superficiality, and we make texting instead of phone calls a preference in our relationships. Do you agree or disagree, Tank?
Disagree.
Derek?
I'm going to say no, because we just have far more relationships that are just happen to be more shallow, yet we still can have the same depth of relationships. Okay, I'm done.
That was the longest one-word answer I've ever heard in my life. Moving on, number 5.
Lots of hyphens.
They promote FOMO, fear of missing out, syndrome. People measure the sparkly shots of their friends' best moments against the mundaneness of their own lives. Do you agree or disagree, Derek?
Hard yes.
Oh, wow. Tank.
Agree.
Number 6. We have come to need constant validation. People constantly check their number of likes they get on Facebook to validate their popularity, wittiness, and worth. Do you agree or disagree, Tank?
Disagree.
Derek?
Yeah. Yeah.
And finally, number 7 of the 7 ways the iPhone has made life worse, according to this one lady on CNN. Number 7, we're expected to be available for work 24/7. There are fewer and fewer spaces and times when it's possible and appropriate to be offline. Do you agree or disagree, Derek?
Yes, because people don't understand how people's lives work.
Again with the hyphens. Tank.
Agree.
All right. Well, I didn't tally any of that up, but I'm sure it was interesting for anyone who was keeping a tally mark. Those are the 7 ways the iPhone has made life worse. And I just want to mention at the end here that the iPhone has not put into us anything that was not already there. Mm-hmm. These propensities towards things that are making life worse, as this article has rightly pointed out, and a couple of at least these points. We've all agreed to at least a few of them, if not all of them. And the iPhone hasn't made us do those things. It's just enabled us to be who we are. And that's all I've got this week. And if you would like to connect with us, you can do so by jumping in our Slack team, where we're going to talk a lot this week about the government and censorship and the First Amendment and Google and Cloudflare and probably some more James Damore, because he's really popular, I guess, these days for some reason.
He's so hot right now.
Sign up at slack.techreformation.com. And just a reminder, it's free.
And you can hit us up on Twitter, give us a suggestion for a topic, or talk to us about a topic we've already talked about. And we would love to hear from you.
We regularly turn tweets into topics.
Yes, that's at Tech Reformation on Twitter.
This music is used by special permission of Matthew Parker. We appreciate his work. Check him out on SoundCloud or iTunes.
His stuff seriously rocks. Go get some of it.
Assuming Cloudflare doesn't block him, or SoundCloud doesn't block him.
Ooh, zinger there, Tank. Good point.
SoundCloud's dying anyway, so, you know.
Ooh, bigger zinger there by Derek. All right, we're so far into the credits that no one's listening anymore. Don't forget to rate us on Apple Podcasts and recommend us on Overcast and star us on other things. Pocket Cast, the star doesn't do anything. Never mind. And recommend this, share this with a friend who will listen. Thank you. This has been Tech Reformation. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next week. And I ain't looking back.